Hello, everybody, and welcome to another one of our reviews of The Wheel of Time. Today, we're talking about episode 7 of season 1. I'm Cody Haggard. Across the internet from me, my great friend, co-reviewer, Zach Butler. Zach, man, episode 7 starts off asking us as audience members to super-duper suspend your disbelief as a woman in intensive labor just goes ham on a bunch of warriors. And so it was at that moment where I thought, hey, I can either roll my eyes at this or just set in and be like, you know what? I'm just going to enjoy it for what it is. And that's what I decided to do. I was along for the ride. But man, the episode definitely starts off with a bang that some people might roll their eyes at. And for me, it felt like mythological fantasy to me. You know, a pregnant woman fighting off an army to protect her child. I thought that if you can suspend your disbelief enough, it was a strong beginning. But what are your thoughts from beginning to end, just in general, of this 7th episode of season 1 of Wheel of Time?
I mean, I thought this was a great episode, other than suspending a little disbelief at the beginning. I thought this was honestly better than the 6th episode. I know we were very excited for the 6th episode because Brandon Sanderson was excited for it, said that was the best one, and I think we set our expectations, especially me, way too high, and I didn't have any expectations. This is kind of the theme of right. Wheel of Time.
Yeah,
man. It's just don't have expectations.
Yeah, for sure.
You're going to be very happy with the episodes. So
yeah,
this one I thought was great. I thought they finally, 7 episodes in, figured out how to balance having so many characters on scene. I thought that they developed the characters well. They made the dialogue interesting. Wasn't a huge fan of, once again, developing land because, as I've said before, and I still stand by it, even though I thought it was very good, it was well done with him. He's a side character, man.
Okay.
He's not, they're trying to make him a main character now.
Okay.
Other than that, I thought it was a very good episode. I was very excited. I thought they did really well with world building, even though they were in kind of just one place the whole time. I think they did a really good job of expanding the universe of the Wheel of Time a little bit with the Blight and just the eye, talking about finally the Eye of the World. It's an actual location.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed this one. I think this is one of the stronger episodes that they've made.
Yeah, I agree. I really enjoyed this episode. I'm looking forward to talking about it more in depth because I don't actually see eye to eye with you on what you said about Lan. So we're going to have some discussions here. But overall, yes, going into this, thought it was, I'm just going to say it right now, I thought it was the best episode of the season so far. I know we both liked episode 4 quite a bit. But I think just overall, outside of like one scene I really didn't like, this was a really good episode, and it was fun to watch it with my wife, who hasn't read the books, and she's not as much of a purist as I am. She kind of walked away saying, like, she thought this was the best executed. She thought that from beginning to end, it felt satisfying. Like, the conclusion felt satisfying. Like, there was some setup and some payoff that actually really worked, whereas, you know, there weren't all that many episodes at this point throughout the season where you kind of got to the end and you're like, you know, that was really gratifying. We kind of, like, at the end of a lot of episodes, we're like, okay, we'll see how we do with this thing. But I know at the end of episode 6, I was excited because, like I said last week, I love the whole thing of the ways. It reminds me a lot of Moria from Lord of the Rings, which is my favorite scene in the whole entire Lord of the Rings. But I don't want to get too far ahead of myself here chatting. But yes, overall, very good. But let's talk about the very beginning, okay? We were asked to suspend our disbelief a little bit. But do you think that at the beginning, it was a good cold open, or was it a little bit like, what the heck is going on? I know for me, as someone who read the books, I knew exactly what was happening, you know? But trying to think about it from the perspective of someone who is, like, brand new to the intellectual property, was this maybe just kind of like, what the heck is going on here? Who is this lady in the snow? And so what are your thoughts on just the cold open of this week? Because it was definitely the most intense.
Yeah, I mean, as someone who read the first book a long time ago, and I'm still patchy on certain things, the cold open benefited from the fact that the action scene was shot in a really unique way.
Yeah.
The camera angles, like the slow zooms and the pullouts, and just the whole stylized fight is what kept you interested, even though for me, I was in that boat of what the heck is going on. I forget what this is even all about.
Yeah.
I don't know who this lady is. And then her being pregnant on top of it was like, oh, okay. So she's getting stabbed and like she's still killing these guys. She's going off. So I think it was a great cold open for the fact that we finally got some action. I mean, let's be honest. It's been a couple episodes since we've had like it's been a while since we've had a true fight scene. I mean, really, since the Aes Sedai went and fought against like those guys, that army. So
yeah, Loghain's army.
Yeah, so we finally got a fight scene, and I think it was really well shot. And so I think it held my interest in that sense. It definitely has an air of ambiguity that keeps you wanting to watch because you have no idea who this lady is. You don't even really know who these soldiers are and why they want to kill her. And then it kind of just ends with, you know, the sword in her face. And then it's like, boom, opening credits. So I thought it was really intriguing. I enjoyed the cold open. And then I started to remember kind of who she was, and I was like, oh, and so when you find out kind of later, you're like, oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and honestly, up to this point, I've only read the second book, and I don't want any spoilers for the book. I didn't necessarily know who the person was, but I knew what they were doing, if that makes sense, like without doing book spoilers here. But there's one thing I do want to point out as, like, a visual storytelling thing that I think would have just helped the episode transition a little bit better. The cold open was definitely one of those things. You might have even thought, like, you clicked the wrong show at first because it's shot in a very different manner than the whole entire rest of the show. It's like, wait a minute, am I watching, like, a Zack Snyder film right now? Yeah. Or, you know, what's going on?
Just even the clarity of everything.
Yeah.
Like, this is so different than everything else.
Yeah, yeah. It felt very different. I liked it. It was entertaining. And the only thing that I would have done different if I were making the show is that I would have done a very subtle foreshadowing at the beginning. And the very first shot I would have after the credits would be something that puts Rand in the center focus. Like, this is a very common thing in visual storytelling. Whenever there's foreshadowing, the person that it has to do with is typically in focus in the next shot, but it's not a total dead giveaway, but there's like a subliminal prepping that happens within our mind that takes place there. And that's the only thing I really would have done different here, but I was just curious, what do you think about that? I thought it was kind of weird to then have our first scene be like all of them yelling like, Matt, you know?
Dude, that is a good point. I think that having Rand be that focal point right afterwards, him maybe just standing in the way like with his friends surrounding him, I think that would have been a powerful piece of storytelling. But you're right, we fade to black and you got the friends yelling and we tuned in because we know Matt's left behind. I don't think we need that information again, but yeah, I think that would have definitely been more powerful, or at least given audiences that have no idea what's going on, kind of that, hey, this relates to this character.
Yeah.
Because they've done that a bit. I think they've done some of those cold opens where there is a flashback and it kind of relates to the current character that we're following. But yeah, so now we're in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We're in the ways.
And I want this. You were very excited about this.
I was.
From the last episode. And you've said that already. Tell me, what did you think about the ways?
You know, I was excited about it just because I love the journeying through the dark where there's minimal light and there's extreme danger all around you and you have no idea what's in front of you, behind you, to your left, or to your right. And one thing that I thought made the ways so interesting in the books was you know, like I mentioned, I love Moria in Fellowship of the Ring. It's my favorite sequence in all the Lord of the Rings. But like when I was reading Eye of the World, I was like, oh my gosh, this is like Moria, but if you make one wrong step, you're just falling into an endless chasm of nothing. And like the threat of that, I felt was awesome. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the darkness, the scariness. I liked the big kind of action moment we had as they were getting out. But to me, I was like, man, I would have liked just a little more time in the ways. I would have liked a little more tension. Maybe somebody almost falls off or something, a little more danger. But I feel like there were some obvious budget restraints with this show. I think there's only so much that they're able to do, and I feel like the ways are one of those things where, all right, right now, we're going to kind of introduce them, because, I mean, this isn't a huge spoiler, but they're going to be back in the ways at some point in the series. So, I thought it was good enough. It was a nice introduction, and I look forward to being back in there.
Yeah, no, I agree. I thought it was a little quick, but the bits of information that we got in there, obviously very relevant to the story, especially now that we know the Trollocs can use the ways to travel. We know more now about some of the actually all of the characters' deep, dark, like, secrets or the things they're most afraid of because of the ways and whatever that thing was called with that looked like bats flying around.
Yeah.
So, I thought it was quick, but, you know.
Yeah.
If anything, this show is moving us along quickly.
Yes, like, they picked up the pace, which I appreciated. Mm-hmm. I would rather have a well-paced episode where, okay, maybe you have to cut some parts that people really liked so that it feels like it keeps moving rather than staying any one place too long or any one scene too long. So I was okay. One thing I do want to throw out there is Matt's storyline at this point is super clunky. The guy who is the actor left the show. So he's not going to be in the rest of the season. So with Matt's storyline, just my general approach is I'm going to cut it a lot of slack. So if it feels clunky, if it doesn't feel great, I'm just going to look at it as like, hey, the show's doing the best with what they can. They lost an actor like towards the tail end of filming. You know, there's not much you can do about that. Going to cut a lot of slack, show a lot of grace. So if we're not here knocking the fact that Matt's story's just basically irrelevant at this point, it's because they didn't really have a choice. So just wanted to throw that out there.
And another character that cannot be really forgiven and given some grace is Perrin.
Okay.
And I want to just briefly touch on this because we got our favorite characters. We got some stronger characters. I think they're really developing Nynaeve and Moraine and Lan a lot. And then you kind of have, maybe in order of relevance, you probably have Egwene, Rand, and then Perrin is like, you can't even see my hand. That's how low he is.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
So what is going on, man? Like, what is going on with Perrin? He's the weakest story. He's almost as irrelevant as Matt. Matt's literally not even in the show anymore. So what do you think is going on with Perrin, man?
Well, I think Perrin, as I've mentioned before, he's a tough character to adapt. He's a tough character to adapt because he is the strong, silent type, and he's going through a change that he, at least to this point in his story, he's not ready to fully embrace. In fact, he doesn't like it about himself. The show hasn't fully revealed what that is, but they definitely have to by the next episode. If they don't, I would actually chalk that up to bad writing. If they don't give him some type of answer in episode 8 or in this season, it better happen like at the beginning of season 2. He's a tough character to develop, and I think just in general, there is a... So do you want to go all the way, talk about the Egwene, Rand, Perrin dynamic?
Let's go there.
Okay, let's go all the way. Let's look at Perrin's full character arc this entire episode. So this is now kind of out in the open, right? There is a love triangle between Perrin, Rand, and Egwene. And this was something I was a little bit concerned about. I never mentioned on our reviews because having read the books, that dynamic's in the books, and I was really curious if they we're going to continue on with that dynamic. It's not obnoxious in the books, but it does exist. And I thought, you know, maybe because they made him kill his wife, they'll kind of abandon that whole arc because it is very tropey and feels more like teenage angsty, like Twilight type of stuff than really, you know, a more mature show. However, they keep it in while giving Perrin this really dark backstory. And honestly, I think Perrin in the book, in my opinion, is one of the most like sympathetic characters because he's like genuinely like a friendly person. He's a quiet type. He really is there to protect his friends, wants what's best for him. And I'm not going to lie, the way they paint him in this whole argument with Rand and, you know, kind of alluding to the fact he's kind of always had feelings for Egwene, it kind of just makes him look like a bad person. And I don't like that because that's just not who Perrin is. Perrin is not a bad person, you know? And I didn't like it. I thought, like I told you before we started recording, it felt like payoff without setup. Because unless you knew from reading the books, you didn't know about the love triangle. And I don't think the show hinted at it enough. Like, you could retroactively look at things and be like, okay, yeah, I could kind of see that. Yeah, I could kind of see that. Like, when he puts his arm around her when they're all alone. But I think a lot of people would chalk that up to like, hey, they're both like terrified and cold, you know, like this guy's not really trying to, you know, after his wife just was killed by his own hands. And so for me, I felt like it felt like a payoff without setup, which is a big no-no. This is like a big no-no. But what about you, man? Because I know you didn't necessarily think the whole way that I did on that.
I can get on board with the show did not do a good job of setting up the love triangle. I mean, I definitely didn't get that vibe at all until this point, which I think most audience members are going to agree with Rand when he goes, wait, what did you just say? Like, that's what I was thinking.
What?
We're all thinking that. But I think that scene is very powerful for Rand, and that's why I really liked it, is because Rand is still kind of dealing with these really conflicting emotions. He's jealous, and he's overprotective of Matt, and he's, you know, kind of lashing out at all these people. And if he really is the Dragon Reborn, it's kind of concerning that he acts this way. Mm-hmm. And if he's not, if he's a warder, I mean, for everything that we've seen of like warders, if he's really going to be Egwene's warder, which we find out later, they talk through that and it's kind of like, oh, okay, that's mm-hmm. a possibility. Like he doesn't really have warder like traits and characteristics. Like you look at Lan, you look at some of those, you know, the green warders, like they all have this like noble, disciplined, stoic approach to how they go about guarding their Aes Sedai. And even then Rand's like, dude, you just kind of went off there. And so that's why I like that scene, is because it shows kind of how emotionally unstable Rand is, that he's willing to kind of lash out at everybody around him. Mm-hmm. And he kind of believes, you know, the lies that he tells himself, even though Moraine is like, don't believe that. So, mm-hmm. The reason why I enjoyed that is not because of Perrin. Yeah, I agree. The whole love triangle with Perrin it fell flat because you didn't do the work to make it seem like there was this love triangle. But I think it was strong for Rand because it kind of shows some of his character faults, and mm-hmm. it shows that he's emotionally unstable.
Yeah.
And it shows that like he still really cares about Egwene and he loves Egwene and he's going to do what we all do, which is kind of make the person we love feel bad. And sometimes just so that we feel, for some reason, we think that, okay, they'll start to care for me now because they know that I made them feel bad. So like I thought it was a very human response.
Yeah.
In that fight. Yeah. So that's why I enjoyed it.
Yeah. And I do think Rand's characterization in this episode and in earlier points too, really does come through, because he is somewhat of a frustrating hero at points in the book, especially like mm-hmm. the further you go into the Wheel of Time, you kind of get to spend more time in, like, being frustrated a little bit with Rand. Like, you know, you could be doing better here, buddy. But also, like, you sympathize with him because of, mm-hmm. you know, what's revealed at the end of this episode. And yeah. so, yeah. And while we're on the topic of romances, right? We talked about the love triangle between Perrin, Egwene, Rand. There's so many characters we could kind of really get down into the nitty-gritty about. But I do want to talk about this. Like you said at the beginning, the romance for Lan and Nynaeve didn't really do it for you this episode. Tell me why, because I actually don't agree with that statement. But I want to know why.
Yeah, I don't agree with developing Lan just yet.
Okay.
I get that he's kind of a favorite in the book because he is the warrior and he is the strong, silent guy that's, you know, gonna kill all the Trollocs when they show up because he's just that guy. I mean, in my mind, he's the, you know, the Legolas of the book. It's just like, of course, everyone's gonna like him because he's mm-hmm. He's the guy that kills everyone and he does it really yeah, fancily.
That's fun stuff.
Yeah. And so I think that the story would benefit more for developing the characters that actually matter right now, which are Bran, who we finally got some character development. He's kind of been out of the picture for a while. I think developing Perrin, I mean, I know we just kind of trashed him a little bit, but he's a main character in the book.
He is, yeah.
He's a very major character in the book. And I think developing Egwene, I think those three... I mean, Matt's out of the picture, so we can't really talk about him. I think developing those three and maybe Moraine should have been the focus of this first season with some introduction of, like, Lan's backstory. But I think what's going to be an issue is people are going to want to know more about Lan and his plot arc than they are about Rand and maybe some of the other main characters who this is the whole point. Like, they are... One of them is the Dragon Reborn. And mm-hmm. so I think focusing on Lan, you're kind of focusing on the wrong character. You said in the last episode, you don't like the whole forbidden love thing. And here we are with the forbidden love story. So,
okay.
I'm not a huge fan of him either. And so when it's like the strong, silent guy and the town witch or whatever she's called, I forget her name.
Wisdom, not witch.
I couldn't remember, but like it's yikes. It's just it. It's the forbidden love thing again. And so I'm not a huge fan of that either.
Okay.
And I'm not gonna give pass to what probably my favorite character in the series. I mean, I'm kinda arguing against my favorite character here is Lan. But yeah, that is why I just didn't think it was relevant. It wasn't done well. I just don't think that's what the focus should be on right now.
Okay. I could get behind what you're saying. However, Faldara in the books is where we finally get Lan's backstory. You know nothing about him virtually until we get to Faldara. You find out about him being the last remaining family member of the Fallen Kingdom of Malkyr. And this is the first time you also are kind of introduced to, like, oh, hey, like, Nynaeve and Lan have a thing. Like, they've got a thing going on. They've been traveling together for a while, and then it kind of all comes out that, like, hey, they've got a little bit of a romance here. They've got an interest in each other. Way more innocent in the books than the show. And the show is pretty innocent as well. Like, it's not, like, like an infatuous relationship. I think they legitimately care about each other for who they are and who they found out they were going to be. And I actually felt like this romance was very faithful to what Jordan writes. And I loved Faldara because it was like this big surprise of like, oh yeah, Lan is amazing. Like you liked him the whole journey. And then you're like, wow, he's a mm-hmm. wonderful character. And I don't know if the show has done a great job of really setting up the rules of warders and the wisdom. Like, it was kind of alluded to that the wisdom and the women's council, like, don't marry in mm-hmm. Two Rivers, which actually isn't true. Just most of them just choose not to because they... It's kind of like how the Aes Sedai. Yeah. Like, they could technically marry, but most of them choose not to. And then... like land, for example, like warders don't really take wives either, but it doesn't mean they can't be in relationships. And yes, it is kind of like this forbidden love thing, but Moraine and Lan have a very, like, good understanding of, like, hey, if one of us is in love, we're going to support it. But anyway, I thought it worked, and I actually think that they have very good chemistry as far as, portraying those characters, how I would believe them to act in a relationship.
Absolutely.
It was like, you know, Nynaeve is kind of awkward. Lan is not
also awkward.
You know, he's awkward in the sense that he just wants to kind of be a gentleman. But when the door was open, he was like that comforting, like calm presence. So I actually kind of liked it. I was like, oh, this is the one romance in the show that I actually kind of liked. So I thought that was pretty funny.
Oh man, I did write in my notes. Awkward first date vibes,
For sure.
Was just
for
like,
sure.
Oh, it was classic, man. That was really well executed. But yeah, we'll see where this goes.
Yeah.
From the show, if you're only following the show's rules and context, you would get the vibe of, you know, wisdoms never marry. I mean, I think basically Lan says that. Wisdoms don't
he
marry.
Does. He does say that. But, yeah. So I watch everything with subtitles, right? So it was, in quotation marks, almost like he was mocking her, right? Because he was saying something that...
Okay.
He was repeating what she said to him in, episode 4 when it was, kind of like, hey, we might have a little connection. And then she's like, a wisdom doesn't marry. You know, he, tried doing something nice for her or something. And then she, jumped to... You know, the most ridiculous of conclusions, and then he kind of throws it back at her. But hey,
all right, I can get on board with that.
Hey, all I'm saying is I enjoyed it. I'm glad you didn't like it because I like hearing a different perspective.
Yeah, yeah. And then let's get to the very end of it. Is Rand the Dragon Reborn? Is he actually?
He definitely is. Now, there is still potential that they might try this whole five-headed dragon thing. It's a little theory that's been going on the internet. And even with Min, the seer, they kind of allude to it like, oh, you know, they're all interconnected. But as much as I don't like it, I feel some like Rian Johnson Last Jedi vibes from what Rafe Judkins is trying to do with the Wheel of Time, with the subverting of expectations. But I think... With more taste, I would say. Like I do think that this team does care about the source material. I do think they do, even though I don't agree with every decision along the way. But I think they kind of established it here. Rand is the dragon, right? They wouldn't have allowed this reveal to be quite as emotional or for him to have as strong of a reaction if they were really not going to have it be Rand. Now, I do think they're going to elevate the other characters to be extremely important, because they are. And, yes, I think at this point it's safe to say, Rand is the dragon, and, he's the only man that we've seen channel other than Loghain in the show. And they kind of, they went through, they showed you how it all happened, they fill in the blanks with... how, you know, his father, Tam, isn't really his dad. And yeah, so I do think. I think definitely Rand is the dragon. If they change that in episode 8, I will admit that I was wrong. But I think for sure this was establishing we were kind of trying to tease all you purist fans for a while. But yes, we're giving you what you want. But that was my takeaway. What about you, man?
Yeah. Yep, I agree. He's... most likely the Dragon Reborn. I mean, if you're going to do all those cut scenes and go back through time and establish that, and then next episode be like, actually, we were just kidding. It's somebody else.
It's all of them.
Then I have no idea what you're doing. But yeah, I mean, if just in basic, you know, film, this is just kind of establishing a character to be what you expected them to be. So yeah, I think, you know, they teased it for a while, and they still have some explaining to do, with, you know, Nynaeve, and she's really the only other one that showed. Oh no, Egwene. So they have some channeling abilities. I mean, they're probably going to become Aes Sedai. if Rand truly is the Dragon Reborn, which is looking like it will be. So I thought, you know, the ending, very well done. Got me excited just as much as the previous episode's ending did. It's like, okay, now we know who the dragon is, hopefully.
Yeah.
And they're going through the Blight, which looks really cool. Like that whole background is really, really a cool part of the book, I remember. So I'm excited. I'm excited. I am happy they finally revealed the dragon. Hopefully, if the show's going the way we think it is.
There's only one more episode left, so
I mean, at this point, if you're not, then it's like, I don't know what happened this entire season. But, this will be interesting, getting to the eye.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to the last episode. I look forward to the climax, the conclusion of this season. I am thankful for episode 7. It kind of gave me a lot more faith in the show going forward. So, conclusion, my score for this one, I can't give it a 9 out of 10 quite. I can't go that high because there were just a couple of things. The parent thing really kind of knocked it a few points for me. Payoff without setup, I never like. But I do think it's the best episode of the season. I'll score it an 8 out of 10.
Ooh, you took my score. That is what I was going to give it. 8 out of 10 for me. I think that's got to be our highest score, right? Or is it tied with episode 4?
Yeah, it's tied with 4.
It's tied with 4. I think these are on equal playing fields. They both did a very good job of developing characters, especially this one. I was finally happy to see that they could balance all of them. They even gave Ogier, your favorite guy, like a little bit of a why is he with them? Oh, this is why. He shows them how to get through the ways.
Absolutely.
Like, they never really explained anything. And then he kind of just disappeared, which we won't get into now. But
he'll get his time in the sun. He will.
So I think they did a great job developing all the characters that they had. And we'll see. We'll see. Episode 9, last episode.
We'll see what it is. Next week, the final episode. We might not be back next week. We might have to wait till after the holidays. We do have Christmas and families and all that. But we will do a conclusion for the Wheel of Time for sure. So be sure to subscribe so that you can see when the video comes up right away. And we might do a whole overview of the entire season and our general thoughts. But thank you guys so much for listening, for watching. And we will talk to you guys next time. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye.